Our first case this morning is 2020-823, the State of Ohio, ex rel. J. Johnstone versus the City of Cincinnati. For this city, we have Mr. Hicks.
Madam Chief Justice, and may it please the court, William Hicks for respondent, appellant, City of Cincinnati. I would like at this point to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. At first blush, this case appears to be a simple matter of a writ of mandamus related to the promotion of a single captain and the City of Cincinnati's police force, who, as at this point, has already been promoted to captain. However, if the district court's opinion is affirmed, it will in essence render the 2007 amendments to revised code 124.44 inoperative and superfluous and violate various other rules of statutory interpretation. And additionally, it will conflict with the provisions and the principles surrounding writs of mandamus and the traditional broad discretion that is accorded to municipal civil service commissions, particularly in the area of competitive promotional examinations. As such, we believe the decision of the district court should be reversed. Initially, the rules of statutory interpretation that apply to this are multiple. First, as the court is well aware, the plain language of the statute is used to determine the legislative intent. The language in this amendment in 2007 was, municipal civil service commissions may require a period of service longer than 12 months for a promotion to the rank, singular, immediately above the rank of patrol officer, which, as conceded by respondent or by appellant, is sergeant. You have to presume under the rules of statutory interpretation that the legislature chose the words that they selected for a reason. Had they wanted this amendment to apply to other ranks, they could have said ranks and stopped there. Instead, they said rank, singular, immediately above the rank of patrol officer. And additionally, the rules of statutory interpretation provide that any interpretation that renders a statutory provision meaningless and is disfavored and to be avoided. And the district court's opinion renders the last paragraph superfluous and inoperative. Additionally, another important rule of statutory interpretation that applies in this case is the expression of one thing implies the exclusion of another. Here, the expression that the rank singular immediately above the role of patrol officer implies that other ranks above that are not provided for and cannot have a time and grade requirement longer than 12 months. Further, the legislative history supports the city's position in this case. The legislative history, while very sparse, essentially restates the sentence that was added to revised code 124.44 and says this was added to allow municipal courts, municipal civil service commissions to require a period of service longer than 12 months for the rank immediately above the rank of patrol officer. Now, there was substantial discussion in the trial court and the district court regarding an advisory, what I would term an advisory opinion of the Civil Service Commission that was issued approximately 2 months after their initial ruling that was based on the city solicitor's opinion to allow police lieutenants with greater than 1 year and less than 2 years to sit for the examination. That advisory opinion was issued and discussed that it was not precedent setting and discussed this was based on the principles of equity, diversity, and equal opportunity.
Excuse me, Mr. Hicks, but I couldn't really tell that the Civil Service Commission actually in the first instance when it allowed those three officers to take the test the next day, that it actually relied on the solicitor's opinion. It looked like it just was a factor mentioned along with a lot of other arguments. Is that an issue?
But I wasn't getting it all, but when they're in their minutes, they cite to the opinion from the solicitor's office And that position was also given orally during the Civil Service Commission meeting, because I was the one who actually gave it. But I don't think that is dispositive in this case. I think the fact that they later changed the class specifications for both lieutenant and captain and attached that opinion that was under the name of the city manager, but it was written by the solicitor's office for him to disseminate, illustrates that advisory opinion was not only, it was never followed and was subsequently discarded. From our perspective, that is irrelevant. There's the principle that courts will not reverse correct judgments if based on erroneous rationales. Here, there's even a step farther from that, because the erroneous rationale, to the degree that the equity and diversity and equal opportunity argument in that advisory opinion, it was never followed. And so we're even a step beyond that. So if the commission had given some bizarre erroneous rationale and had actually followed that, as long as that there was support for the correct rationale, then there was a correct decision ultimately, that should be affirmed. Additionally, courts should exercise great caution when issuing writs of mandamus. And the cases, litany of cases discuss the fact that you'd have clear and convincing evidence, and courts should not substitute their judgment for the commission. And reiterating that in the areas of competitive promotional examinations, the civil service commissions have broad discretion. Unfortunately, based on the trial court and the Court of Appeals decisions, they essentially ignored these mandates and essentially substituted their judgment for the commission. And the Court of Appeals in its decision noted that, they were reviewing it de novo, but they give deference to the decisions of civil service commissions, and they will generally not intervene absent an abuse of discretion. And in this case, the Civil Service Commission was relying upon a reasonable, well thought out opinion from the city solicitor that, based on multiple rules of statutory interpretation, we believe is 100% correct. But even to the degree that there is question over whether that is 100% correct, that deference to civil service commissions, as well as the overriding caution that is to be exercised in writs of mandamus, should prevail and supports the Civil Service Commission's decision to waive the 2-year time and grade requirement in this case.
Mr. Hicks, ultimately in 2017, when the Civil Service Commission reached its policy, it cited diversity and equal opportunity. So was that a forward thinking policy?
To be honest, Your Honor, I do not. I know the individual in the HR department actually wrote that, and I do not know what they were thinking. And in all honesty, I don't believe that would be a valid rationale under the U.S. Supreme Court's Ricci versus DiStefano or other cases to use an actual protected class, such as equity and diversity, which seems to be implied there. I don't think that would be a valid way to excuse the 2-year time and grade. I know several of the candidates who appeared before the commission when they were there made comments about equity and diversity being reasons for their request, and possibly that colored the HR department / civil service commission's decision to issue that.
I think diversity and equal opportunity. Equity was another one.
Yes, and I think those all sort of, I sort of read them together, but I believe that those would not be valid. I don't know what their true intent was there.
Is it okay?
I'm sorry, Ron, I didn't like
that. Are you arguing that it shouldn't be in there?
Yeah, I think at least there should be great caution exercise when citing diversity or other potentially protected classes in changing a rule.
It didn't really cite any federal statute, any federal law or regulation. It just spoke about diversity and equal opportunity. I mean, are we bound by that kind of a consideration?
Obviously, we have to be equitable in the exercise of our civil service rules, but I do not know exactly what they were saying in there. And given that it was never followed, I mean, it's really sort of, I think, sort of almost an illusory, you know, this advisory opinion is essentially meaningless. It'd be one thing if they had taken some people out of the process or made any actions upon it, but there was no action ever taken in reliance with regard to that February 2017, what I would term advisory opinion, and they have their subsequent actions.
Does it really matter? I mean, this is a mandamus action, right? So in order to demonstrate entitlement to relief, the petitioner has to show that he has a clear legal right to be able to take the exam. Does it matter what logic the civil service gave if the statute says that he is not entitled to take it? I mean, how can he show a clear legal right?
I don't believe he can. And actually, and he had the clear legal right because he had over 2 years. Where he really has his problem is with Captain Swingley, who finished number one on the exam. And he was the individual who had less than 2 years.
Right.
And more
I misspoke. So he has to show a clear legal right that the other officer couldn't take the exam. And if the statute says he can't, how can he demonstrate that?
Yeah, I do not believe he can, Your Honor. And quite honestly, I believe that this would be more appropriate for a writ of a quo warranto. But he specifically sort of wants to have his cake and eat it too. He wants to be able to pass the exam, you know, be able to be promoted, yet he doesn't want to force his fellow officer who finished number one to not be in that position. And so, you know, we believe that there's no real position open because, you know, all he was asking for is to be placed in a position he had a clear legal duty and a clear right to, but there are two people in those positions and were promoted. And I believe I'm at the end of my three minutes left.
All right. Thank you very much. Mr. Rule.
Good morning, Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, George Rule on behalf of relator appellee Jay Johnstone. The appellee's position in this case is really straightforward. The Cincinnati Civil Service Commission decision was an abuse of discretion.
Why does that matter? I mean, again, your client has to demonstrate a clear legal right. If the statute doesn't provide an entitlement to relief, how can he demonstrate a clear legal right? I mean, even if the Civil Service Commission did the right thing for the wrong reason, that doesn't give your client a clear legal right to the position.
Your Honor, with respect to this particular case, the Civil Service Commission expressly stated that it was
okay, but why does it matter what they expressly stated if your client did not have an entitlement to the position? I mean, even if the Civil Service Commission did, you know, got its reasons wrong but came to the right result, how does that give your client an entitlement to the position? How can your client show a clear legal right here?
He finished third on the exam, which was made him next up for promotion. But I would also submit, Your Honor, that the statute doesn't say what the city says it says. And if you look at the language of the statute, you need to look at the plain language of the statute. The legislature very easily could have stated what the city wants the statute to say. It could have used prescriptive language, which it did not. And if you actually look at the legislative intent.
Well, but by that argument, why did the legislature add the last sentence? Solicitor may require a period of service of longer than 12 months for promotion to the rank immediately above the rank of patrol officer. I mean, under your reading of the statute, that sentence is completely unnecessary.
That sentence provides and makes it clear that the Civil Service Commission has flexibility to require a longer period of time. the language,
or the rank immediately above the rank of patrol officer, it makes it clear. But you say it doesn't, you don't need that sentence at all under your reading, right?
No, I don't think it renders the language superfluous. It simply supports the legislative.
But you say that the first three sentences or four sentences already say that the city can require more than 12 months for any position, right?
Correct.
Isn't that your reading? So why did the legislature bother adding that last sentence?
Well, Your Honor, in terms of looking at the recommendations of the Civil Service Review Commission, which the General Assembly created that commission, and that language, not cited at page 64 of our appendix, indicates that a municipal civil service commission should have the flexibility to set minimum service requirements for promotional examinations. The judgment of how much time is adequate to prepare for command level appointments should be made at the local level.
Again, so why did they add that last sentence?
I can't answer that question.
Mr. Rule, 124.44, the first sentence deals with original appointment above the rank of patrol officer. Basically, no positions above the rank of patrol officer in the police department shall be filled by original appointment. So that doesn't really speak to anything beyond patrol, correct?
Correct.
I mean, except that you can't fill it by original appointment. So then the process is sort of a two requirement in this statute, one being the educator, the taking the test, the other having served at least a year. And then somehow then, I think maybe it was in 2007, this last sentence was added. But I guess I can't see anything in this section that prohibits the Civil Service Commission from putting that two-year requirement, for instance, to go from lieutenant to captain. Do you read it that way?
I agree with that, Your Honor. And as we argued in our brief, the language of that last sentence is permissive in terms of may require. And in fact, the final decision, February 2nd, of the Civil Service Commission indicates that there's nothing in 124.44 that prohibits a Civil Service Commission from allowing somebody to make an exception to allow someone to sit for an exam.
So then the default then is the Civil Service Commission rule, which is you got to be there for 2 years. So I guess my question to you, even though your client is a captain now, if you prove that he was entitled to have that observed, meaning that he had a right as far as mandamus goes, a clear legal right, does he have then the option to seek back pay for having been passed over by two people who had not been serving for a year, but they scored higher on the test, or for 2 years, but they scored higher on the test? Does he have a right to seek back pay for that?
Yes, Your Honor, because as the trial court found and the First District affirmed, he established a clear legal right to the promotion and should have been promoted as of April 2017. And so for that period of time, before he actually got promoted in 2019, he should have been a captain.
So counsel, there was a two-year requirement, right, in order to take the test initially.
Correct.
And then the Civil Service Commission knocked that down to 1 year. And that opened the field to more takers of the test. Correct?
Yes.
And you're saying they had no right or authority to change from the 2 year to the 1 year. Is that correct?
No. They absolutely had discretion to set the requirements. They just couldn't do it in an arbitrary manner, which
What would have satisfied you as a reason for them to have done this. You know, the reasons they gave, I guess it was 2 months later, certainly I think are valid. Again, what demonstrates an abuse of the process by the commission?
Well, there has to be a foundational basis for the decision.
Like what? Give me an example.
The statute. I mean, if the Civil Service Commission had said in their decision, we're relying on the statute, or we're relying on the arguments of the petitioners.
All right. So what we're, when it, the statute, we're relying on the statute because the statute says it's only 12 months other than the jump from patrol to sergeant. They had to spell that out.
Well, that would have given the relator, that would have given the trial court, this court, some foundational basis for concluding that this decision wasn't arbitrary. And, you know, I think the
decision, wait a second, if the decision comports with the statute, which it does, they can do 12 months. They could do 15 months. They could do, you know, as long as it's above 12 months. And they downgraded 24 to 12 months. They were entitled to do that. You're saying, and statutorily, they were entitled to do that. And you're saying because they didn't say the magic words, we're doing this according to 124, whatever, that it's an abuse of discretion.
It's an abuse of discretion because how they rendered the decision, what the trial court found, and this is from the judge's opinion, the decision to do a one-time waiver of an entrenched two-year time and grade policy, which a ruling by the same commission previously upheld under the principles of equity, diversity, and equal opportunity, without establishing any precedent or practice for future police promotional examinations, is, in this court's opinion, obviously arbitrary.
Counselor, what it seems like, so that you're challenging the test, the waiver of the two-year requirement, which maybe could have been stopped in prohibition, but had this test gone on just like it did, and your client score first or second, is it your assertion that he then would have been promoted to captain because he would have been number one or two on the test, on the exam? But it seems to me if everything happened this way and he finished one or two, yet someone finished third or fourth was promoted instead, that seems to be this argument. But you're challenging the test. Shouldn't there have been some legal action filed to prohibit the administration of the test with eligibility for people who had not been in the service rank for 2 years?
Well, part of the problem with this decision and why it's an abuse of discretion is because they allowed the test takers to take the test the day before the exam. I mean, there was absolutely no time for Captain Johnstone or anyone else to try to stop that. I mean, they made the decision the day before the exam.
They made the decision. I thought you said they allowed them to take it the day before the exam, and I thought, No, you said they made the decision the day before.
I misspoke. they issued a. Well, the committee notes reflect that they were allowed them to take the exam and that they were going to make a final decision at a later point.
Which final again, decision regarding what?
A final decision whether it was appropriate to allow anyone with less than 2 years time and grade to take the exam.
Okay. All right, so they allowed those with a minimum 1 year to take the exam. And they didn't make any representation even afterwards when they issued, you know, their statements 2 months later about the permanency of this this requirement, you know, the downgrade from 2 years to one. Do you find if they would have said, and this is how we are, this will be the, you know, the rule going forward, would that change where you are on this?
No, Your Honor, unless they had given a foundational, they're not allowed to make an arbitrary decision. I mean, there has to be some foundational adequate determining principle.
Well, it comports with the requirements of the statute. And then they gave the, you know, equality, diversity and equal opportunity as a basis for doing that, which would you disagree that that's legitimate? That's a legitimate basis for the commission to do its work this way?
I'm not against equal opportunity or equity or diversity. However, there has to be a foundational basis in the record to base their decision on those principles, which were.
Okay. Do you find, without establishing any precedent or practice for future police promotional examinations, is that what's troubling you?
It's is troubling, but it's the entire decision in and of itself. There's a longstanding precedent of 2 years time and grade in the city of Cincinnati, which the legislative record and the statute and the history have always dictated that local civil service commissions have flexibility to set the requirements. The police department argued in favor of keeping that 2 year time and grade requirement. And then for the Civil Service Commission to throw that out and say, you know, this is on a one-time basis. I do have a problem with that. Mr. I'm not going to rely on it in the future.
What happens to the two current captains who took the exam and were promoted with less than 2 years?
Well, one of the captains had 2 years. There was only one captain at issue. But
okay.
As we argued in the lower court there, which was not what the case was decided on, there was an opening at the time of expiration. Captain Bailey had retired, and. It's also the first district followed its own case law in the York versus City of Cincinnati case, because as the next highest scoring test taker, that then Lieutenant Johnstone had a vested right in that promotion.
My question is, what happens to the test taker who had less than 2 years but was promoted?
Nothing.
That's it. Then, in other words, he's holding that position legitimately right now.
Well, Your Honor, he was four months shy.
Doesn't matter. You're arguing it had to be the 2 year in compliance. So you're saying that he's wrongfully in that position.
That wasn't Captain Johnstone's position during this case.
Well, I'm trying to figure out, you know, what's the long-term effect if you prevail, you know, there's got to be consequences, not only in this situation, but others similarly situated. You know, what are they?
Well, as established in the record, Captain Johnstone has been promoted because there was a vacancy. So it's a matter of lost pay. And there was a vacancy at the time the case was filed, is our position. So in terms of looking at the particular facts of this case, there's no impact, negative impact on Captain Swingley. And in our view, there is no impact on the statute, because the particular facts of this case, the Civil Service Commission did not base its decision on the statute. It's in the plain language of their decision.
Mr. Rule, this didn't come out of nowhere. There were four lieutenants who actually challenged the Civil Service Commission's rule, and so they addressed it. And are you telling me that the Civil Service Commission didn't have the ability under the general statute empowering its existence and operation to do that, even for a one time?
No, Your Honor. The Civil Service Commission did have discretion to set the time and grade requirement. What the trial court found and what the First District affirmed is they can't exercise that discretion arbitrarily, which is exactly what they did in this case. So they did have discretion, but they can't just pull out of left field some basis that has no foundation in the record. We're going to make the decision based on equity. Okay. I mean, they have to have a foundational basis that is rational and not arbitrary and not capricious to make the decision. And Relator Johnstone established that in the trial court, that it was an abuse of discretion, and that he had a clear legal right to the promotion.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Rule.
That's all I have. Thank you.
Mr. Hicks.
Madam Chief Justice, Court. Just to respond, I think that it's clear here that why the court, the Civil Service Commission, the problem with the Court of Appeals decision is they have great discretion, Civil Service Commission, in this area. And the appellee continues to describe this, advisory opinion as pulling out of left field and there's nothing in the record. I think it's important to note that this is a writ of mandamus. This was not an administrative appeal where there's a record set in the Civil Service Commission upon which under 2506, you rely and that is what guides the case through. This was a writ of mandamus, which, as the court is well aware, is an extraordinary writ that the courts are reluctant to provide absent clear evidence that supports the decision to reverse. And
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but when the four lieutenants who were seeking a change to the rule approached the commission, were they approaching the commission in a legislative fashion or in more of an adjudicatory fashion where maybe prohibition would have been the issue rather than, or how would you describe that particular proceeding and how the commission dealt with it?
So that proceeding and our Civil Service Commission, there are various things that are presented every second Thursday. And some things under our Civil Service Rule 17 are provided for certain types of things, dismissals, reclassification studies, discipline discharge suspension over 3 days. You get a quasi-judicial hearing. There also are provisions in our civil service rules for what's known as an appearance, where people can come and air their grievances with the commission, and the commission can take action. However, there isn't the quasi-judicial nature of the hearing, and there's no court reporter, there's no cross-examination, or trial-like formalities. And that's what this was. And they, were able to say their piece, various people spoke, and they were there for quite a while, but there was no quasi-judicial hearing from which a record, which would then be submitted to the Common Pleas Court, would be created. In this case, it was just an appearance by these members.
Thanks.
And Also, I would note that there was a discussion of the, you know, that there was no motion for a TRO and that there was no time for these officers to stop this. Having been at the city for many years, we have TROs filed daily. I believe we had one yesterday, in fact, and they're often filed on a, just a few hours notice. So there was plenty of time for these officers if they wanted to file a TRO. And in fact, they were actually benefited because the people who had less than 1 year less than 2 years had only a day to study for the exam. So apparently they were a bit more prejudiced by the late notice than anyone. And I'm at my time.
Well, you've got 15 seconds. Oh, no, you have. I'm sorry. I was reading it wrong, pointing in the wrong direction. Thank you, gentlemen. We will take the matter under advisement and you'll be notified of our decision.